Josh Swanson Vogel Law Firm.
Thank you for joining the program here today. We're going to go to the phone line. Josh Swanson Vogel Law Firm on the line. We're going to talk a little bit about eminent domain. But first, I do want to get a couple updates from Mr. Josh Swanson on a couple other news items, if you will. The first one, let's do the fun one before we get the serious one, and then we'll get into eminent domain. The first one being, hey, we got an NFL draft coming up. There's the potential that a North Dakota State Bison, or Bison, depending on which part of the country you're in, will be drafted in the first round. I tell you, man, something's going on in the water at NDSU because Carson Wentz, Easton Stick, man, you name it. We've been producing out some Billy Turner. We've got some great NFL athletes out there. Now it looks like we might get another first-round draft pick. What's going on, Mr. Josh Swanson?
Christian Watson, North Dakota State, stud, talented wide receiver. Looks like he's potentially going to be a first-round pick, and with his size, athleticism, and his leadership abilities, high character guy, consummate football player, shows up, puts the work in, gets the job done. He's a guy that some wide receivers have that personality where, you know, Keyshawn Johnson famously said, just throw me the darn ball. You know, you can see Christian downfield blocking the national championship game this past January against Montana State on Kobe Johnson's long touchdown run. There's Christian 50 yards downfield making a block inside the 15-yard line, 10-yard line to seal that touchdown run. So it's truly really exciting to see another North Dakota State player. Would be NDSU's third number one draft pick, first-round draft pick, rather, going back to 2015. But you hit on some of the names, you know, whether it's a Kyle Emanuel, Derek Tuska, Billy Turner, Trey Lance, Carson Wentz, Easton Stick, Volson. You get one of the Volson boys here, that looks like he's going to be a draft pick as well for North Dakota State, which I think would be their fifth offensive lineman taken in the NFL draft in the last decade. Just really, really impressive what the Bison have been able to do, and it'll be really fun seeing where Christian gets his name called here this week.
Josh Swanson on the line with us. He's an attorney for Vogel Law Firm, and we're going to talk about some property rights and eminent domain in just a second. But he also moonlights as a podcaster and radio show announcer for, actually radio show host for, what is the name of your Bison podcast again?
The show is Heard It Here with Swanee, and then we do a Bison program on 740 AM, The Fan out of Fargo, KNFL.
That's right. Okay. So, what I've read about this wide receiver is that he might go to Christian Watson, is his name correct? 6'4", something like that, 6'3", 6'4", 6'5". But from the projections I've seen, they've got him in the first round to the Green Bay Packers. I've seen even some speculation that if he's around in the second round, he will not go any further than what the Washington Commanders have. And did him and Carson Wentz ever play together as a redshirt senior type of a redshirt at all? Or any, did they cross paths at NDSU at all?
They never did, no. Okay. By the time Christian got here, Carson would have been with the Eagles.
Okay, so there's really no connection outside of North Dakota State there. But I did read a lot of speculation that him and Trey Lance might want to reunite, huh?
Yeah, they played together, and Christian was his top receiver.
Yep.
And I've seen the same rumors online. You know, it's funny because every team's going to draft every player, so you can find something out there. I've even seen stuff where the Vikings might try to move back in the first round and take a wide receiver, even when they're so loaded at the opposition. But the idea of, you know, Deebo Samuel, the 49ers stud receiver, wanting a trade and reuniting Christian with Trey to give him that home run threat, that would, as a Bison fan, that'd be a lot of fun to watch those two reconnect with a storied football organization like the 49ers.
As soon as I saw that Deebo Samuel news, that's the first thing I thought of, because of the draft position and everything, that it wouldn't surprise me one bit if they traded down and somehow got Christian Watson to connect up with Trey Lance. Because really, if you want your quarterback back to succeed, I mean, given a good receiver that's 6'4", 6'5", that can catch the ball and run, oh, you're not doing any better for your quarterback than that, except for maybe a big old offensive lineman, I guess.
And the versatility, that's the thing about Christian, too. He's kind of that jack of all trades, whether it's in the passing game. NDSU used him on a lot of that jet sweep, jet motion, running attack, and he's also returned several kicks for touchdowns in his career. And then, of course, the downfield blocking stuff, where that's a big – not a lot of wide receivers in the NFL want to do that, where they're downfield and they're engaging with the defensive back, try to spring the running back. Such a big body, athleticism through the roof, and a physical guy that's not afraid of contact. So whether it's San Francisco, Washington, Green Bay, Kansas City, you know, he'll have a fan here. We'll be pulling really hard for Christian to succeed in the NFL.
Kansas City is the other place I saw the speculation where he would land. I thought, boy, that would be, wouldn't that be a treat? Pretty, I bet you know who would be the most upset? Whoever's in charge of the merchandise sales for the Denver Broncos. Because every single Bronco fan west of Bismarck, because keep in mind, North Dakota has two fans. They got Minnesota Vikings fans on the east and Broncos fans on the west, and then just a bunch of Packers and Raiders and Steelers fans intermingled amongst the rest of the state. A bunch of Eagles, I guess, and Colts are still kind of around. But primarily, Broncos on the west, Vikings on the east. If Watson went to Kansas City, I'm telling you, we might see some defectors.
Yeah, folks, it's interesting that you say that, because I know a lot of folks that are Vikings fans and North Dakota State fans, and they bought Carson Wentz Eagles jerseys. I don't think the Colts jerseys sold quite as much as the Eagles ones, but you still, from time to time, see Wentz Eagles jerseys here around Fargo and obviously even in Bismarck. So I suspect, you know, with these NDSU players, Bison fans are extremely loyal, and whether it's a Christian, a Carson, a Trey Lance, whoever we're talking about, that there'll be some jerseys flying around, and this fall at the Fargo Dome, you can bet you're going to see some Christian Watson jerseys in the stands.
Josh Swanson on the line with us. We're going to talk a little bit about some energy-related news, some legal news, some eminent domain, as well as some property rights in just a second. Looking at the clock, so we're going to keep him on for another couple minutes to talk about the NFL draft coming up. Since I went into overtime, I apologize on that. But, you know, you are kind of the expert in the state when it comes to North Dakota State information. I mean, there's a few of the AP writers and beat writers, but, man, you've been covering the multimedia side because you write for magazine. What's that? Bison Illustrated, and then you've got your radio show. You've got the podcast. You also know a lot of the players. You went to, you know, you're from North Dakota here. Where did you grow up again? Which part of, what small town do you always mention when we do our interviews?
Manoc, North Dakota, and Benson County, right up by Devil's Lake.
It's not Strasburg. It's Manoc. I apologize. That's like swearing up there. Okay. Let's wrap up here with the NDSU Bison talk here real quick, if you wouldn't mind, and then we'll take a brief pause and we'll come back here and join Josh Swanson and talk a little bit about some, I wouldn't mind an update on the Wilkerson case and just kind of where that ended with some of the property rights that are happening there. And then we'll talk about the eminent domain when it comes to this carbon pipeline, this carbon capturing, sequestering pipeline that they're talking about coming across the state. But so what are the knocks on this wide receiver? Because everything I read, it was like pretty much the, you know, he went to North Dakota State, so he wasn't in the, you know, power SEC conference. And, you know, they just weren't too sure about maybe his hands or I don't know, something like that. But it all seemed pretty like small town versus big town knocks type of a stuff. What are the pros saying? Because the draft is coming up when, Thursday here?
First round Thursday night in Vegas. Yep.
Is there a draft party going on for him, or is he at the draft? Do we know?
No, I had actually talked to somebody at NDSU last week about that, and I don't think he's got an invite to Vegas. The NFL invites some of the you know, top prospects. Yeah. I know Carson and Trey were both out there. I don't think as of yet Christian's got an invite for it, so I suspect he'll probably be. I don't have any inside baseball on this, but I think, you know, he's got a really good family. I suspect he'll be somewhere watching it with them. Probably he's from Florida. He's from Tampa Bay, so okay. Wouldn't surprise me if he's watching it down there or up here in Fargo.
How did he come up to Fargo then? How did he make his way up here?
And NDSU's done such a great job with a lot of their assistant coaches that Florida is in the recruiting profile. And going back to the Craig Bohl days, and has done a nice job targeting position players from Florida. So when I say position players, you're talking skill kids like wide receivers and defensive backs, whether it's a Trey Dempsey, a Christian Watson, right now Jalen Bussey, explosive home run hitter, running back on the roster. Zach Mathis, another really big wide receiver. If you go up and down the roster, NDSU targets the Sunshine State, and that's that connection there, and they just missed on him. And I think it's one of those things, maybe he was a late bloomer in high school, didn't put up the eye-popping numbers. And Florida is a high school football hotbed, and there's a lot of times guys that can play get out of that state, and I think NDSU is a testament showing with all the NFL success the Bison have had. If you come up to North Dakota State, we find good football players, and we develop the heck and coach the heck out of them where they get to the NFL. They'll have that opportunity to be successful. So NDSU, that pipeline to Florida has served them very, very well. And with Christian, watching him play the last 4 years, he's got as good a hands I've seen from any Bison football receiver. You can watch the tape of whether it's, the Montana State semifinal game in December 2019, the Missouri State game from this fall here, where he had a couple of really nice grabs, setting up the tying and game clinching score. So I don't have any concerns about the hands. I think the knock on him is the same garbage you hear about anybody who doesn't play in the SEC or Big Ten, is that can they do it at the biggest level? And on the one hand, you say, well, that's fair. He hasn't done it week in and week out in a place like the SEC. But you see guys from the SEC that get drafted and really don't amount to much in the NFL. And you see guys that play, quote-unquote, small college ball at the FCS level that have storied careers. You think about guys like Jerry Rice and Walter Payton, which are both FCS products. So, if you can play, you can play. And once you get to the NFL, I think everybody as a rookie is starting at that same level. And you see, top draft picks, Carson struggled as of late. Hopefully he gets it back on track in Washington. And players that get drafted in the latter rounds, Tom Brady is a prime example, being, fifth-round pick or sixth-round pick, whatever he was. So you got to prove it. And I think Christian, I'm excited because I think wherever he goes, he's going to be a guy that has an immediate impact. I think he's that good that this fall, early on, a lot of folks are going to be talking about Christian Watson in the NFL.
There's two things I see from this. Was he the one that has like a lineage with the NFL, and the only scholarship he got was North Dakota State? Was that his bio I was reading, and he took it, and then he just went and made a career out of it?
Yeah, I think that's probably Seth Wilson, one of the running backs.
Okay, okay.
His dad played for the Bengals on one of their Super Bowl teams.
All right, well, yeah, either way, what I feel is really important for the North Dakota State University is the fact that they put out another first-round draft pick. Because, you keep that momentum going, what Craig Bohl started, and you need to keep that going to keep it. It's a grind. That's what he said. It's a grind because the 1 year you don't put out a top, first-round draft pick means that every year that you did not put one out, and now all of a sudden you're in the recruiting wars, man. But if you can say, hey, you come to North Dakota State, you stand out, and, geez, you go play with Aaron Rodgers, and you get drafted in the first, three picks. If you're a quarterback, man, that's some weight. You got Cooper Kupp, who had a pretty good year this year. Cooper Kupp did, didn't he?
Yeah. The MVP of the Super Bowl, Matt, pretty well for himself, Eastern Washington product.
Yeah. Well, all right, we'll take a brief pause. When we come back, Josh Swanson's going to give us an update on the Wilkerson case, as well as we'll talk some eminent domain as well. This is Talk of the Town with Steve Bach and Jason Spies filling in. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Crude Life with host Jason Spies.
Welcome back to Talk of the Town with Steve Bach and here on Super Talk 1270. Josh Swanson on the phone line with us with Vogel Law. We're going to talk about some eminent domain property laws and some property rights and some of the things that are happening with the carbon pipeline in just a moment or two. But first, I did want to get an update because, boy, it seems, I don't know if it's been 5 years, 7 years, how many years it's been that we've been checking in with some of the property owners that you've been representing across the state of North Dakota when it comes to Lake Sakakawea, some of the mineral rights that are happening there. Is it Wilkerson? Is that right? Or is it Wilkinson? I think it's Wilkinson,
right? Wilkinson.
Give us the, you know, the brief history and then kind of where this case is at, this court case is at, because this has been a truly historic case.
Yeah, and the history, to be brief, you know, we got to compress 10 years into a few minutes because that's how long this case has been going on. And in a couple of weeks here in mid-May, we'll be going up to the North Dakota Supreme Court for a third time, as we've talked about, you know, the first two times that we were at the Supreme Court in the case involving the ownership of the minerals under Lake Sakakawea. The state attempted back around 2010 to claim that it owned all the minerals under the lake, private property rights, be darned. And we fought that. We were successful. And now we are back. We tried it to the court in Williston. On damages last July, the district court judge literally signed a 63-page order that was written word for word by the state. No changes, no nothing. Wrong. We believe wrong on the law, wrong on the record and the facts, and zeroed us out on damages, basically saying that, agreeing, which he was, you know, of course, required to do because the Supreme Court had already decided that our clients own the minerals, but saying that the state can call something a title dispute. Say it owns property, it doesn't for 10 years, and then when a court tells them they don't own it, there's no repercussions, which is just offensive and wrong on the law as far as the Fifth Amendment of the United States Constitution and Article 1, Section 16 of the North Dakota Constitution. So we're appealing his decision on the fact that our clients weren't damaged. That'll be argued May 18th before the Supreme Court of North Dakota. Hopefully it's the last time that we have to go before the Supreme Court, but we'll keep fighting this one to the last dog dies because our clients were wrong, and we believe that justice must be served in this situation.
So you haven't been awarded this yet, but we've done a couple interviews where you guys won specific cases. So is this an appeal that you're in, or what's going on?
Yeah, it's an appeal. There's two issues. One is ownership and the title question, which we've prevailed on. You know, we've prevailed here two times before the North Dakota Supreme Court related to the ownership question. And then the last time on appeal that we won, the Supreme Court said the district court had to decide our damages. And the district court said that our clients weren't damaged at all, which is the issue on appeal. The ownership question's been decided. The argument coming up here in a few weeks before the Supreme Court will be whether or not the district court committed error by holding and finding that our clients didn't suffer any damages for the 10 years that the state claimed it owned their property.
So this is your clients where their mineral money was held for 10 years escrow, and they actually had people going to college and graduate, and I think someone even passed away in the
died.
10 years.
Yeah, several of them died.
Yeah, so no one got impacted, they said?
Yeah, yep, that the state could base. Jeez. The state literally held and possessed our clients' royalties for 10 years. The great news is that we finally got those back in late 2020, but the issue is when you're deprived, if any of the listeners out there, if you had the right to any payments, and in this situation, approximately $600,000 over 10 years, and I were to say, as the government, I own those, I'm keeping that, I'm holding it, you can't use that, you're deprived of the ability to use that money. So all those family members, you know, they couldn't do things like pay for a kid's education, pay for a trip, invest the money, pay off a mortgage. For 10 years, that money sat in the Bank of North Dakota. And under the Fifth Amendment, the state, our position is required to pay interest on that, because had our clients owned the money under the Fifth Amendment and supporting case law, they would have been able to put that money to use, which makes sense, and the state wouldn't have held it and deprived them of it for those 10 years. So that'll be one of the issues we're arguing before our Supreme Court in a couple weeks.
Well, it's the state's argument. They went to spend it, so we don't have to give you interest.
Yeah, basically that it's a title dispute, and and it's frustrating. The state doesn't seem to understand that they are the government. This isn't a private property dispute between two private individuals. The Fifth Amendment applies when government takes your property and interferes with your use of it. And as we all know, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, attribute and fundamental rights of owning minerals is the ability to get paid the royalties on those minerals, right? Because that's what the payoff and the benefit is for owning the minerals. And if you're not getting paid the royalties, if the state is literally claiming that it owns it, they're in, not just interfering with your possession, they're actually physically appropriating it. So it's hopefully the Supreme Court agrees with our position. You know, the state's basis for claiming it, for the life of me, Jason, what I can't figure out is how some really smart people at the state capitol have let it get this far and think that they can just tie up private property rights and make a totally baseless claim. And the Supreme Court has already made that clear in another decision that the state never had any basis to claim any of these minerals that were reserved by private landowners when the United States came in and acquired property for Lake Sakakawea and Garrison Dam. But the state proceeded with it anyway. And the example that the U.S. Supreme Court used in a 2019 decision called Nick was that the bank robber, once they've robbed the bank, if they're caught and have to give the money back, they still rob the bank, and they need to be held accountable. And we're very much hoping that the Supreme Court sees the Fifth Amendment the same way that we do.
Unreal. Unreal. I honestly can't believe this is still going on, and we're going on 10 years. But, well, hang on through the break. We're going to take Josh Swanson on through overtime here on Talk of the Town. We're going to talk a little bit eminent domain, which is kind of like this, but it's a little bit different. In fact, that would be a little bit different. Can you eminent domain minerals? Is that what the state did? They tried to eminent domain minerals, basically?
That's basically what they did. They tried to backdoor it, even though they had no basis to do it. And I'm sure we'll talk about this a little bit in the next segment. But to take something by eminent domain, you have to satisfy the public use requirement. And the state trying to take the eminent domain minerals would never fly because they can't satisfy the public use requirement, which is just one of the many problems with their position.
So let's find out if the state's going to satisfy the old school. We had parks and roads and bridges, but now we're talking about pipelines for carbon is the next eminent domain discussion happening in North Dakota. Josh Swanson on the line with us. He's an attorney at Vogel Law Firm, also a podcaster called Heard It Here. Radio show as well on 740 The Fan. Check it out, folks. We come back more with Josh Swanson. My name is Jason Spies, filling in for Steve Bakken on Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
The Crude Life with host Jason Spies.
Welcome back to Talk of the Town here on 1270. Jason Spies filling in for Steve Bakken. Josh Swanson on the line with us here today. We're going to talk a little bit about eminent domain. So I got a bunch of news tips, and my phone line blew up yesterday because apparently there was some shouting or some disputes or all kinds of a brouhaha, we'll just call it that, happening with this carbon pipeline and the governor and some landowners and, you know, other things. And, you know, I just interviewed Summit a few weeks ago. And then I saw that's the, you know, company involved. So I don't really know exactly what's going on, but I do know about eminent domain. And I do know that this has become a very different strategy for a lot of different reasons for a lot of different people than what I learned. When I learned, you know, through my North Dakota state education was eminent domain was for, you know, roads and bridges and schools, maybe a park. Well, as I got older, I found out it's for a lot more than just that. So, Josh Swanson, you actually do eminent domain law, don't you?
Yeah, a big part of eminent domain and takings law are intertwined. And so some of the issues we're seeing now with the Summit Pipeline, that Midwest Carbon Express, and then with the pore space issue that was argued recently here by the Landowners Association at the Supreme Court and, of course, Wilkinson, it's all interrelated. And I think the overarching concern that I have is I think we're on the precipice of some really important decisions when it comes to government power and government overreach and the state deciding what private landowners can and can't do with their own private property and whether or not certain uses fall under the public use requirement. And it could be a sea change in the wrong direction, I think, as far as respecting private property rights that are protected by our Constitution and the Fifth Amendment. And you know, this is just part of it with the summit and what they're doing with that Midwest Carbon Express, and in threatening so early and throwing out that term eminent domain. If you're any pipeline company, if you're starting to lob out that Molotov cocktail that is eminent domain, you better know what you're doing, because you're going to light some stuff on fire, and you're really going to kick off some farmers, ranchers, private property owners by bandying about that term, because it's a legal term and legal, you know, a legal instrument that shouldn't be used lightly at all. It should be a tool of last resort. And I think part of what you're hearing is when folks like Summit start throwing around that term, or they got land agents out there throwing it around, it does not sit well with North Dakotans or other folks here in the upper Midwest.
You know, it's very interesting because, you know, North Dakota is really two states, and we've talked about this before, east and west, the cowpokes and the ranchers, and, you know, the oil side and the farming side, whatever, you know, you want to say. Geographically, they are very different places. And so when you've got from the east side of the state, where Fargo and Grand Forks are, I mean, you're like 4 or 5 hours from the nearest oil well. So there's a real big disconnect. So I don't think that they are used to a lot of the, you know, different land agents in a certain way when it comes to, you know, different oil and gas companies. This isn't really an oil and gas company, though. It's a carbon company, I guess, or an agriculture company. We do have history with landmen and pipelines and that sort of thing. I don't remember hearing too much scuttlebutt about, you know, eminent domain pipeline issues in the last 10 years out of the state of North Dakota. I just remember hearing eminent domain about Skakawea. I don't remember hearing much about pipelines. What have you, I guess, give me a little history if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, and what they're doing is they're an Iowa-based company that wants to take carbon from a bunch of ethanol plants here in the upper Midwest through a network of pipelines and ship it out to western North Dakota to store it underground. And to do that, you know, the pipelines are a big part of the infrastructure, and they've got some big time backers, including Continental. Harold Hamm has put a bunch of money into it, so they've got some serious power players involved. And I think, you know, you and I have talked about this quite a bit, Jason, and I, you know, the bulk of my practice is in the Bakken in western North Dakota, where if you're talking about well pad, well site agreements, pipeline right of ways, you know, I negotiate those all the time. The operators have the ability under the law, if your surface is in the spacing unit, they can put their well pad there. What they do, generally, most of them, they're really good about working with surface owners, many of whom are clients of mine, in reaching an agreement where they agree to pay them. They don't take it via the statute and then end up going to court, which it's not quite an eminent domain, but they still got that force and effect of statute where they can use the property to put down the oil well. What a lot of those companies in western North Dakota end up doing, to their credit, is they work with the landowner and they come to an agreement and pay the landowner fairly. The problem that you're seeing now with this carbon capture pipeline is I don't know if they underestimated the North Dakotans, the landowners. One, their resolve, and two, the fact that if you're going to run anything through their land, not only do they want to know the details about it, they should get paid for it. And they're not, you know, there might be this misconception, and I see it all the time being a North Dakota lawyer dealing with attorneys at big firms in, you know, Dallas, Denver, or even Minneapolis. They think that, you know, we just fell off the back of the turnip truck and hit our heads, and when you start throwing some punches back, it kind of takes them off guard a little bit. So I think here what we're seeing, you hit it on the head, where on the western side of the state, folks are, you know, they're very well aware of the infrastructure for energy, and this is, you know, a carbon pipeline, but it's a massive energy-related infrastructure project, and it's something that folks on the eastern side of the state, until you've been out there to western North Dakota and seen what things are like on the ground, what the infrastructure looks like, its impact for good and bad on these communities, it's tough to have that appreciation. So I think now, you know, I know Richland County passed a moratorium here recently against Summit using eminent domain to acquire right-of-way land in Richland County. Is something that the eastern side of the state hasn't had to deal near as much with as the western side has, whether it's, you know, going back to the United States coming in and acquiring all that property for Garrison Dam and Lake Sakakawea, whether we're talking about the Bakken counties with oil and gas infrastructure. So it's something that is kind of new to the eastern side of the state here, and folks are learning how to best deal with it.
Richland County in eastern North Dakota has already banned summits in eminent domain.
Well, they can't ban it. What they well,
I mean,
do
I mean, they didn't yeah. specifically call them out by name, did they?
Yeah. Well, what they well, that's what it was geared toward, and I don't have a copy of the resolution in front of me, but the county passed a resolution saying they're against eminent domain for pipeline right of ways, and now with the you know the state sure. Public Service Commission, they're the ones that would have to issue the permit, and it's of course all political. You know, Governor Burgum at the Williston Basin Petro Conference calling for North Dakota to be carbon neutral by 2030. This is a big part of that. Things like this and these sort of large capital-intensive energy infrastructure projects. So when you've got a county on the eastern side, and then you're not just talking, you're talking, you know, conservative Republicans, liberal Democrats, environmental groups. It's a weird kind of combination of bed partners here who have serious concerns about that. You know, you can bet that they'll be very loud about their concerns to the PSC and state government when the permit review comes up. But eminent domain itself, if they can't negotiate the pipeline right-of-way agreements with landowners and they do resort to that step, it's ultimately a legal determination for the courts. And I think what we're going to see is a battle on whether or not this is truly a public use that qualifies for eminent domain power by the company trying to invoke it. So buckle up. It could be a real interesting and fascinating ride because if the politico is involved, if the winds start blowing a different direction, some sands could start to shift. But I think what puzzles me, Jason, is when these, you know, I've talked to a lot of landowners who have been approached by Summit. When these land agents come in, and I, you know, I know the folks, some of the folks involved in it, and some of them quoted in the newspaper on Summit side, and they say they want to be transparent and have discussions with landowners. Well, they need to tell their land agents to stop threatening eminent domain, and that's something they've done. I think Iowa and South Dakota so far have a discussion, be transparent, reach an agreement. You're going to make some money off this. Deal fairly with landowners and attempt to negotiate those pipeline right-of-ways with them rather than dropping in the eminent domain bomb saying, well, if you don't accept our first offer, we could eminent domain you. I think that is just, you know, poor business strategy, and I think it's a really poor way to treat landowners.
Richland Colts, man, they're bucking out already. That's their high school mascot, the Richland Colts, Richland County Colts. They're just south of Fargo, right?
Yeah. And what's interesting there, they've got an issue going on about some solar power and using land for that too. So we're seeing.
Oh, you're kidding
me. Some of this. No, that's one of the big.
Are they in the diversion? Are they in that diversion kerfuffle too?
Yep. They sure are. That's involved there too. And what's interesting.
Boondoggle.
With a lot of these,
whatever.
Yeah. With these energy projects here, you know, you're starting to see some of it now. In North Dakota, on the eastern side of the state, in the Red River Valley, which is something, you know, Richland County goes, if I got my math here, it's the very, very southeast quarter of the state that stretches from that I-29 border. So you got, you know, the casino as you're coming into the state, Hankinson, up through Morton, Wahpeton, Windmere, Colfax, Walcott, just stopping here. Kind of Kindred, I think, is Kindred and Leonard would be just on the other side of the northern border of Richland County.
Yep.
So it's something that's interesting because, you know, like I said before, it's something folks in the valley haven't had to deal with. And when the government comes knocking and tell you they're going to use your property for something, well, good luck with that with North Dakotans because we'll fight like hell to challenge that.
Josh Swanson on the line with us from Vogel Law. We're talking about some of the eminent domain discussions happening right now in the state with the carbon pipeline, as well as some of the historicals with energy infrastructure overall. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the, I guess, directions this eminent domain could go. Because, folks, I don't think you have any idea when somebody starts throwing out eminent domain this early, I don't think you understand the amount of strategies that they could have. Josh Swanson on the line with us. Jason Spies filling in for Steve Bakken here on Talk of the Town on 1270 Super Talk.
The Crude Life with host Jason Spies.
Welcome back to Super Talk 1270 Talk of the Town. Jason Spies filling in for Steve Bakken. We've got Josh Swanson on the phone line. He's an attorney at Vogel Law. And we're talking about eminent domain here, some of the things that were happening with the Summit Pipeline, as well as just eminent domain issues overall. And as I teased in the break, you know, a lot of people, when they think of eminent domain, they think of good things. They think of the roads and the bridges and the schools and the parks. And then some people, maybe a little jaded, they start thinking about the railroad and the way the railroad kind of got the nickname the Big Bad Wolf, because they were throwing around words like eminent domain at the end of the day. And then, you know, the J.D. Rockefeller used it as a strategy with Standard Oil, so we had some antitrust stuff that's happened. The one court case that caught my attention, though, when it comes to eminent domain, is called Kelo versus New London, and it happened in the late 90s. And essentially, what it did is it allowed economic developers or builders or developers or whoever, speculators, to say, I want to put a shopping mall here. And this shopping mall is going to have this kind of economic impact on this community, so it's for the good of the community. And they got it through. And I don't know if it was a shopping mall or what it was, but I use shopping mall because that's the ultimate economic center for America, baby. So, Josh, talk to me a little bit about, you know, that Kelo versus New London as a potential strategy. Is that something that could even be applied in something like this? Because it is for economic development. Walk me through this.
Well, yes and no, and that's a really good question. So Kelo was a decision by the U.S. Supreme Court back in 2005 is when it was decided. And it was for the party that invoked eminent domain. It was a private party looking to invoke eminent domain to get property from another party, saying it was a blighted area, and the area they were seeking to acquire was a part of a comprehensive development plan. So, you know, think of any of the redevelopment that's gone on in Fargo. If they would have tried using that in downtown here as part of the redevelopment, say, we're going to condemn it, we're going to eminent domain it, and then we're going to get your property, kick you out of your house or apartment, and then we're going to move in our stores and shops. And the Supreme Court, in a decision, a 5-4 decision that surprised a lot of people, said, yep, that was fine. So then what you had happen was a bunch of legislatures put even more restrictive requirements in their laws, saying that a public use or a public purpose does not include public benefits of economic development, and including an increase in tax base, tax revenues, employment, or general economic health, which is quoted right out of Article 1, Section 16. So it basically sought to protect against that Kelo decision. The issue here with Summit, and I think where the rubber is going to meet the road, is a pipeline that's for a strictly private benefit, private investors and parties that are pumping this carbon from their plants up to North Dakota to store. Does that qualify as a public use? And you're going to have really good arguments. You're going to have skilled attorneys on both sides of the equation here, because there's a lot of money involved. And there's, when you're talking this amount of land and this amount of money, the sides are going to lawyer up and they're going to spend money on it. And eventually the decision that could, if it does get ultimately to the North Dakota Supreme Court, is the requested use, does it qualify under the public use requirement? And what's really fascinating there, you know, back in March, the Supreme Court heard argument in Northwest Landowners Association versus State of North Dakota and Continental Resources as an intervener and appellant in the pore space case, and whether or not the state Senate Bill 2344 was an unconstitutional violation of the Fifth Amendment, because what that legislation that was put into law said was that oil companies do not have to compensate the surface owner for using and injecting materials into their pore space, which runs afoul of not just the Fifth Amendment for the reasons that were argued to the court, but North Dakota law for decades had recognized that surface owners own the pore space. That was upheld by both the Supreme Court and a federal court in North Dakota. And now the question is, can the state pass a statute saying that companies do not have to compensate the private surface owner if they use their pore space, whether you're pumping in salt water or carbon. And I think the case is argued by Derek Brown out of Bismarck. I think Derek did a nice job arguing it. That case is all about pore space. And a decision in that case by the Supreme Court saying that they don't have to compensate the surface owner, you know, it's not quite apples to apples to what's going on here. But the questioning by the justices at the Supreme Court was very much cued in on it. I mean, they got it. They understood what it's about. And a decision there, you know, could go a long ways as to what the writing on the wall is as far as whether or not carbon capture and the pipelines for that to ship it up here to North Dakota, whether our Supreme Court would eventually rule that it satisfies the public use requirement. Now, they're not going to specifically come out and say that because that question's not in front of them. But, you know, sometimes courts, not just the North Dakota Supreme Court, but in what's called dicta, you know, they can kind of put the writing on the wall as to how they might be inclined to view a particular issue. So it'll be real fascinating to see, not just in Wilkinson, because the scope of the state's power and whether or not they can claim private property and tie it up, whether they have to provide damages for it. But here in the Northwest landowner's case, does the operator have to compensate a surface owner for using this pore space? So, you know, earlier when I said there are a lot of very important questions right now on property law and the government's power with respect to that are making its way up to our Supreme Court, that's 100% true. And the Supreme Court, sometime I would suspect, in a decision in the Northwest landowner's case could come out any day. It could come out tomorrow. It could come out next week. It could come out in July or August. You know, that coupled with the Wilkinson decision, and that could have a big impact on the rights of property owners to not just the uses of their property as far as the eminent domain perspective, but whether or not they're entitled to damages when someone comes in and says, we're going to use your property for a reason you haven't authorized, but we're not going to pay you, or we shouldn't have to pay you after we've screwed you over for 10 years saying we own it and we don't. So stay tuned. It's a big issue.
Totally forgot that Kelo was based on the blight, was based on that, you know, and then we got gentrification that comes after that and all kinds of Main Street conferences to clean up this different thing. So it's that this one is a very sticky one to me because of just like you say, it's economic development. That's a very broad category to go in. Did North Dakota react to that? Kelo versus New London, because, you know, we got a state-owned bank, we've got a state-owned mill. It's not, you know, we've sued the federal government over and over again, so it wouldn't surprise me if they reacted to that federal case.
Yeah, well, and a lot of states did that. They took steps to bulk up the protection after Kelo, because it was, you know, it's not just the North Dakota thing, nationwide, especially a state. When you get a state that depends on the land for its livelihood, you know, agriculture and energy are the top two economic drivers in our state. And what do both industries depend on? They depend upon the land. And you also have, you know, tourism is a big industry and hunting and fishing and everything like that. And a lot of it traces back to the land. So anytime you've got a court or a legislature trying to change the landscape and change the ground rules under things like the Fifth Amendment, as far as the rights, responsibilities, and damages between private property owners and the government and individuals who want to come in. And, you know, you mentioned the railroads earlier, and, you know, a big part of the reason, you know, as well as anybody, that North Dakota has a state-owned bank and a state-owned elevator has to do with farmers getting screwed over on the railroads. And then North Dakota saw to it that they put strong protections in for our farmers and ranchers. We still see some of that with the anti-corporate farming law. And here, you know, keep an eye on what is not just and it's not just a legal issue, it's a political one too. What are the courts going to do, and what are our political leaders and legislators going to do when you have folks that coming in with a wide open checkbook that want to make North Dakota their own personal sandbox and playground, and they're waving around all kinds of big checks? Are our Supreme Court and our legislators, are they going to stand up for the citizens of North Dakota and the private property owners, or are they going to find a way to twist and turn to the whims of folks outside of the state that want to use North Dakota for their own economic development purposes? And there's a balance to be had, to be sure. You know, the oil and gas industry has done tremendous things for Western North Dakota. But at the same time, it's important that we never lose sight of the fact that North Dakota's strength is in its people, and a big part of that are property rights. So it's something that I get so passionate and wound up about because I come, from a fifth generation of folks that have farmed the land up in Benson County for over 100 years now. And if the government or some big company were to try to come in and tell my grandpa or my dad or great-grandpa what they can and can't do, my people I went to high school with, my aunts, my uncles, what they can do with their land, like I said, we'll fight that. We'll fight it as far as we can take it because it's something that, it's a legacy. When you think about it, it's really a legacy for a lot of these families and folks that have lived here for a long time, and it's something that it's absolutely imperative we protect.
You bring up a good point. A lot of politicians and a lot of elected leaders, they talk about draining the swamp and, reducing that type of behavior. I didn't realize so many of these guys like carpet because I've never seen so many carpetbaggers coming in from out of state making money off North Dakotans in my life, honestly. And I'm being totally serious about that. And I don't try to get too political, but it's gotten out of hand lately. And when we're going to take a brief pause, we come back, we're going to conclude with Josh Swanson, because I want to pop quiz him on a whole new direction and strategy and whether this is being discussed in any of the legal papers or anything, because we're going to talk about public health. We talked about economic development, and the Supreme Court already saw in favor with Kelo versus New London that you can eminent domain if you can show proper and good enough economic development. Well, we're going to talk public health next. And it all started with the smoking ban. Josh Swanson is our guest. My name is Jason Spies, filling in for Steve Bakken here on KLXX Super Talk 1270.
The Crude Life with host Jason Spies.
Welcome back to Super Talk 1270 with Steve Bakken, talk of the town. My name is Jason Spies, filling in, and we're looking at the clock. We got to make this quick, Josh Swanson, because overtime, like we always do, let's talk about eminent domain here with public health, because I saw it with the smoking ban. I saw it with several other things, with the coal industry, starting to see it in the oil and gas industry. They're using public health in order to advance, whether it be a special interest, whether it be a narrative. It's a blanket law, and I'm wondering if that's a possibility with the pipeline as a public health strategy.
Sure it is. Sure it is. I mean, anything that, when you're making an argument and putting that together as far as how you're going to qualify something is a public use requirement, leave no stone unturned, and I would expect the attorneys, if it does get that far, I mean, maybe they'll take heed and they'll actually sit down and treat landowners fairly. That's my hope. I mean, One Oak, I'll use them as an example. They're a company I deal with on pipeline right-of-ways all the time. And they are, if not the most fair, one of the fairest companies when it comes to negotiating fair terms and for landowners that agree to put an oil and gas pipeline on their property. But in a situation like that, the public use, you never know what a particular judge is going to latch on to say that something qualifies as a public use. And we saw some of those arguments here in the Northwest Landowners case. And the idea you could tie it into public health, you can tie it in to energy, you can tie it into public safety with the pipelines versus truck traffic, stuff like that. I think all cards are on the table. So it's something if we end up seeing it, and it wouldn't surprise me at all. And climate change is probably part of that, where they can cite all kinds of statistics talking about global warming, climate change, and everything like that, and how carbon sequestration is a way to reduce the carbon footprint, so it's good for everybody. And whatever the old joke back when Justice Kennedy was on the United States Supreme Court was, what is constitutional law? Well, whatever Justice Kennedy says it is, because he's the deciding vote. So with the North Dakota Supreme Court or any court, you take a look at the composition of the folks on the bench, and if you think there's an argument that might particularly resonate with them, then, you absolutely make it.
Are you still taking clients, or what's happening in your law practice? Are you so busy that you're full, or what's give yourself a plug if you got a few seconds?
Oh, come on, man. I'm a Benson County businessman. Grew up, my dad's an entrepreneur and has a couple businesses in Maddox. So, I love helping people. I love the law. Love the folks I work with here at Vogel. And we're always taking new clients. And I think that's probably one of our strengths is our expertise, where you got folks like me who can really dive deep onto the property law issues. And you got, a Lou Keck or a Jesse Walsh that are criminal lawyers who can really dig deep into that. So if folks want to visit with me about it and negotiating, that's I would leave it at this, Jason. If the landowner is approached about a right-of-way on their property, they are not required to sign anything. Call a lawyer. The most frustrating calls I get are from folks that sign any sort of contract, particularly a land use contract, and then they think, well, geez, my neighbor got more money, or this contract really bends me over the barrel. I should talk to a lawyer about it. But by the time they've signed the contract, that's the law between them and whatever company or other party they're signing the contract with. So take the time and spend a little money on the front end to have an attorney review it and to make sure your rights are protected. And the example I'll use is, you know, going back to One Oak, when I negotiate a pipeline agreement with them, I've got a 6 to 7 page rider, something, a separate document that I make part of the right-of-way agreement that contains anywhere from 30 to 50 provisions protecting my client's rights on everything as far as liability, indemnification, reclamation responsibilities, compensation responsibilities, and that's something that most landowners wouldn't think to do. So, you know, we're absolutely taking new clients, 701-237-6983, or they can email me at jswanson, J-S-W-A-N-S-O-N, at VogelLaw, VogelLaw.com, and I would be more than happy to visit with them. That number again is 701-237-6983. Just ask for Josh.
That's almost like you do radio or something on the side.
gotta get the reads right. You gotta get those advertising reads right. So absolutely.
Yeah, it wasn't quite Saul Goodman, but dang it, that was a good pitch at the end. You know, nobody's that good. So all right. Hey, thanks, Josh Watson. Appreciate it.
Hey, absolutely. Best, always good talking with you, Jason. Best to you and all your listeners.